All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Full Spectrum Cannabis. We've got Lance today interviewing his buddy, Todd Harris from Plyft. Is that correct? All right, you guys, have fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome back, right? I mean, if they haven't listened before, thanks for showing up.
But absolutely.
We've got Todd from another state in Minnesota for a conference, yep, which is where Calandra is, in case anybody's wondering. But we've got Todd here.
I'm a poor substitute for Calandra.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's pretty wild.
Yeah.
She's pretty wild. We'll see what we can do about filling in that space, you know what I'm saying? So let's start with introducing yourself a little bit, right?
Absolutely. As stated, Todd Harris, one of the co-founders and the CEO of Plyft, which is a classic cocktail-inspired THC-infused soda brand. And we're proud to say that we're one of the trailblazers in this wildly expanding and rapidly changing landscape of THC-infused beverages.
Right. Yeah, I've had the beverages, right? There's four of them right now.
We've got three primary flavor SKUs, and we have five total SKUs in market with several other in development.
Because of Plyft Plus. Yep. So you've got Plyft, and then you've got Plyft Plus, and correct, when you're Plyft Plus, and you're just adding some other.
Yeah, we're adding
milligrams.
Yeah, we're adding what the people came for.
Yeah.
More potency.
And a stouter can.
Stout's one way to put it. We like to call them small and mighty.
Sure.
On purpose. So yeah, they obviously took on a little bit different of form factor. And that was an insight that was like, hey, let's give the people more of what they came for.
Right.
So
yeah. The get it done mentality of some.
Yeah.
You need to give them some of it.
Yeah. And in emerging categories and in emerging spaces in general,
yeah,
people, there's utility.
Right.
Right. And people start to look for products that fill a void or a utility for them, right? So there's a world where the social consumption of these beverages, like, you know, people running around just socially downing 10 milligrams, I don't know how functional that is.
Right.
Right? But like 4 to 5 milligrams, that's a more social,
yeah,
dosing. So, that, you know, we wanted to create products that can sit with people whenever,
right,
they want to consume, not just like for one consumption,
sure,
type of, you know, event.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, so you've got Plyft in a 12-ounce, and then you have Plyft Plus in a
7.5,
going to 8, yeah, right?
Yep.
It's going to go to an 8?
Yeah, because we caught wind that can manufacturers are going away from 7.5s.
Okay.
So,
all right, so you're going to change that.
That's inside baseball for all of you out there.
Inside baseball. One of the things that I like about it is, you know, I've kind of gone away from a 16-ounce beverage as far as my own ingestion, right? Because it's a lot of fluid.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, sometimes I want to relax and it's later in the evening and I've drank everything I'm going to drink that day. You know what I mean? And that's a decent amount of fluid.
Yeah. I get where you're going.
You know?
And as we age, it's
right,
harder.
because you wake up, because the challenge of waking up and just needing to have a, you know, bio break is a real thing. But then what ends up happening is you wake up and then you can't get back to sleep.
Yeah.
That's even worse.
100%.
So now you have to start to manage how many liquids you have within the last 2 hours.
For everybody that's listening to us, you now are getting to a point where you're starting to put us in an age category.
Yeah, maybe.
Good, bad, or indifferent, we're aging ourselves.
Yes, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, there's no gray. Yeah. There's no gray.
Except for in our hair and in our beards.
Yeah, right. If you're just listening, there's not gray anywhere in this room. Well, that's fantastic. So, Up from Illinois, in for a conference.
Yep.
We covered that. We've got Plyft. What are you excited about for Plyft right now?
We just have an immensely bright future.
Yeah.
Like, we have started to figure out, you know, how to get liquid in cans more efficiently, mm-hmm, how to get them into markets more efficiently, and how to move them on shelves more efficiently. Like, that's the you know, business side of it.
Right.
But we're just excited to, you know, be at a growth trajectory where we can now start to offer the market more things from us. Like, we're starting to hear not only from our retail partners and our wholesale partners, but also consumers, like, hey, we want more from you. We want more, yeah, flavors. We want more form factors. We want more from you, which is a really exciting place to be, because that's you know, that validation that comes from the end user, right? Like
right.
we can self-validate all day long. Our retailers can say, hey, it's going pretty well for us.
Right.
Our wholesalers can say it's going pretty well for us. But at the end of the day, consumers will choose. And the fact that consumers are reaching out saying, what's next? We want more. When can we have it? How soon? Mm-hmm. That tells, that's always happy. That's always a happy place and always a validating and a feel good for entrepreneurs saying, oh man, we're making it.
Yeah. Well, right? somebody enjoys what I'm doing because I enjoy what I'm right. doing. And thank goodness somebody enjoys right. what I'm doing so I can continue to do what right. I like to do.
Right. Exactly. It's like, again, we have bias in everything we do. So yeah. every time we show up, the assumption is our shit doesn't stink.
Right.
Right. But the reality is like, no, someone outside the door is going to say whether your shit stinks or not. Right?
Yeah. 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 And there was something that made me cry yesterday. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Like- exactly. And so for me, for us, for our team, like getting these inbound messages and like one of the most gratifying things is like when our team hears it
right.
and sees it, or like something that they did, created, designed, posted, shared, sold, hung, poster, whatever. When someone gives them feedback like that is organic,
yep.
and directly to them, like that's a super validating. Like, oh right. hey, this happened because of the work you did.
Right.
That's always cool, and like you can see it in a small company like ours.
Right.
So.
I'm at the point where I'm just excited. Like I'm excited when it gets sold in, but I'm so much more excited when it sells through.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, reorder. That's the best part, right? Is the reorder, because that's some of that validation that you look for.
Yeah. And like you and I have been friends and doing this for like, you were one of our first retail partners in Minnesota, right? Like, and so, you know, I've always committed like whatever you need from me, from like advisory help, forward looking, I'm going to give it to you because you believed in us early. And you know, I can say that is unbelievably gratifying. What you're describing is like that feeling of a reorder.
Right.
Wow, that means consumers like it. But you know, the part that you get to even look forward to even more is when someone tells you that it's flying off the shelf and you had nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
Like you got sold in, but the organic population found you, loves you, and goes and buys you, and you didn't send your friend in there to buy it.
Right. Yeah. Like, you didn't go in and do a tasting there and sell some cases off the shelf for them, right?
Like you didn't pick up your phone and text like, hey guys, I'm in XYZ liquor store, go buy it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like it would happen on its own. Like that's an unbelievable feeling, because that's when people start to thank you. Hey, I haven't drank in 6 months.
Right.
Hey, you gave my family something else to, you know, socialize with that didn't have alcohol. Like all these other feel good stories, and it comes like organically. It's a great feeling.
Right. Right.
And you're close. You have a good product.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. So, you know, looking at the alcohol side of things, right? Like, tell me a little bit of your story, your passion around that, like how this became, like I've heard this story, but everybody else hasn't. And that's what we're here for.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing it up. So I'm, you know, born and raised in Minneapolis. Like, so when this market opened up, I told, you know, my co-founders, look, this is a place where we have a right to win. You know, and it means a lot to me that we have an opportunity to do it in front of my friends, my family, people who've known me my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the why behind Plyft, you know, we get this a lot. What does Plyft even stand for? It's a completely made up name, intentionally one letter short of the word uplift.
Yep.
Because all that's missing is you. And when we say you, it's the collective yous, right? Like where do you find yourself? What is your story? What is your relationship with cannabis?
Right.
Are you canna curious? Are you a canna pro? Like we want to meet you where you are in your journey, right? A safe space, a great tasting beverage that's accessibly priced to everyone. And so, you know, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Alcoholism is tried and true in my family.
Me too.
Right. And I, you know, the insight was the socialization of cannabis consumption is coming. Like, how are we going to be at the forefront of it? And then more importantly, or of equal importance, like how do we provide people of all walks, including those from the neighborhoods, areas most impacted by the war on drugs, black, brown, underrepresented individuals, with an accessible product that they can choose at shelf that doesn't require them or their alcoholic family to drink.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, all of our flavors, classic cocktail inspired, you know, and meant to be sessionable alternatives are 4 milligrams or 10 milligrams are obviously for those who just want to get the job done, like we were talking about before we started. But this is like a personal thing. I want to fund them. I wanted my daughters to say that their father, his partners fundamentally changed people's relationship with alcohol and cannabis.
Right.
And so like, that's where I spend my time. Is like making sure we're telling the story, making sure we're giving people that alternative, and making sure like I'm working with my suppliers, my supply chain, our manufacturers on how do we get our cogs to be where I can show up on shelf and someone can say, oh my gosh, this product, premium look, premium taste, value, price is for me. And it does its job, right? And I'm happy to say, like, my mom, who's been an unbelievable champion of the business, like,
right.
You know, she doesn't love that her story is part of the story, but it's like, that's the story, mom.
Sure.
She's now drinking, she doesn't drink alcohol anymore.
Right.
She's been drinking 2 to 3 Pliffs a night for the last 9 months.
Right.
Right. Like, that is if I didn't do it for anyone else and my own mother benefits.
Yeah.
Like, that's a job well done.
For sure.
And so everything else is like added value.
Right.
And like, again, like the story and the people, you know, the business sucks. Like, running the business is like not my favorite thing. I like to do it because I'm learning.
Right.
But what I love to do is get out, see people, touch people, hear their stories about how our products intersecting. And I think we're doing a really good job of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. What, so you're saying, you know, we're looking at the alcohol thing and we say it's, craft cocktail inspired, yep. Right? The thing that hits me on that, once I hear it is they are inspired, right? And you're saying that they're inspired by it, but it's not obvious,
yeah.
Right? It's obvious maybe in some of the flavor, but even within the flavor,
it doesn't say margarita.
It doesn't say margarita.
Say mule. It doesn't say Paloma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's intentional.
Right? It makes sense that it's that way, right? So that I just wanted to highlight that piece of it because that feeds into it, right? You can go and call something Bloody Mary. You can go and call something Irish cream, which, I mean, I have recipes for and I have desire on making. Is that what it's going to be called? Probably not.
Right.
But, you know, Lemontini, the teeny in it lends to martini, but is not. So it's like obvious, but not obvious. It's
right.
Like trying to kind of do the same thing, but I'm towing the line a little closer, maybe.
Yeah. And like, I can appreciate everyone's, you know, take on it, right? Like, because there's two layers to it, right? It's the product. Like, what is the actual liquid?
Yeah.
And what is my experience with that inspiration or the cocktail, right?
Right.
The other part of it is just from a brand packaging messaging perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a world where, for instance, using your Lemontini,
right?
You are playing into that, you know, comparison to mouthfeel of a cocktail,
right?
A martini.
Yep.
Obviously, martinis are flat. This has got some bubbles in it, but that's for a number of reasons. I get it. I'm fine with that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine with that for everyone's, you know, you're trying to connect with that consumer, that specific consumer.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we left out altogether and we just say as inspiration is because in the cocktails that we're referencing, alcohol carries so much of the flavor.
Right.
That if you, someone's mind says, oh, we're a Paloma. Then they go up and show, this doesn't taste anything like a Paloma.
Right.
We now have lost credibility. In a way.
Right.
Right. So we like to use inspired by so that people understand, like, get an idea of what they should expect, but then their taste buds get to do the rest of the work for them.
Yeah.
We also like are very, you know, keenly at like classic cocktail inspired sodas. Right. So like the occasion of when you drink a soda could be any time during the day.
Right.
Right. And when we felt like when you tie too closely to inspired by a cocktail,
right,
you then get pigeonholed into a drinking occasion. Versus an anytime occasion.
A happy hour, right? Like I said to my grandma once, we would go down, she lived in Illinois, and we would go down to visit, and I'll drink a beer at 12 o'clock. Doesn't matter what time of the day it is. It's not a, you know, there's stigma everywhere, right? And there's stigma around that as well. Like when I decide to ingest whatever it is that I want to ingest, it's nobody's business.
Right.
Right? And so the happy hour thing is what comes to mind because I'm like, Grandma, what the hell is going on? And she's like, no, we got a happy hour. Happy hour can't drink until 4. And I'm like, why can't you drink until 4? And she goes, honey, because then we would drink all day.
So inside baseball, and I can appreciate your grandma's point of view.
Yeah.
She's exactly right.
Right.
We actually, when we started the brand, it was actually happy hour was the name of it by Noble Brands, Inc.
Okay. Right?
Like, so like we were, and then like, so that's where the evolution of the brand has kind of come, but we looked at each other, and our partners that helped us like get the brand together in the first run. And I said, but I don't want to just be looked at for drinking occasions.
Right.
I want to be looked at for anytime occasions. And so that's where like Plyft and this whole, all that's missing is you, the whole, all that's missing is you is like wherever you are in your walk with cannabis, whenever you want to take us, we're here for you. The flavors match. Like it can be a soda, it can be a cocktail, it can be whatever you want it to be.
Right.
Right. And so like, that's the insight. And like my background comes from building brands, bring them to market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a little bit of tech in me, so I understand like how the digital landscape and how people and how our brand shows up both on shelf and in a digital world,
right?
How they need to acquiesce and play together. So.
Sure, sure. That's great. That's great. And so, you know, expanding into some different states and better market penetration within the states that you're in right now, you know, Noble Brands, right? So that's like parent. And then, but then you have an emulsion company too?
Yeah. So we, as part of like our journey to getting a beverage into market.
Yeah.
One of the, and this is back in 2021, 2022. One of the big things we realized is like, there wasn't a really reputable, water soluble liquid emulsion supplier for the minor cannabinoids or hemp.
Sure.
Right. Now there are, right. There's lots of people in the market now, but back then there wasn't.
Right.
And we had an issue with some shelf stability, that we were using a third party emulsion supplier. And we're like, you know, let's look at this like more broadly speaking, what's the end game here? To make sure that Plyft always has a reputable supply chain,
right,
where we can support ourselves. So if that's the case, then let's build this company with that in mind. Mm-hmm. And if Plyft is its only customer, it became a break-even business.
Right.
Because we were just buying it from ourselves.
Right.
But then we started to look at, and going back to the you know, impotence of just like who we are as entrepreneurs and like all about accessibility and calling in and bringing more people to the table, not, you know, pushing people out. We said, well, we're not the only company, beverage, manufacturer, you know, product that is having this issue, right? So let's go build a business that's got some scalability to it that allows other beverage and other product good manufacturers to get quality, reputable, tested, premium ingredients at a effective cost, you know, an efficient, cost-effective input price.
Right.
So like that's the impetus of that business as well. It's called Perfectly Dosed.
Perfectly Dosed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I bring that up because that was one of the reasons why Calandra's really wanted to be here for this show, but other things pulled her away. She was like, they supply my emulsion,
well,
right?
Yeah, and we're going to see her. We're going to see her later today.
That's great.
And then actually, my co-founders are at the show too. So we'll make sure we run into Calandra.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah. Give her a hug for me.
I will for sure.
Yeah,
she's good people. And again, like really, you know, that business, our business, our mission is to truly democratize access to this industry, right? Like, make no mistakes about it. The licensed marketplace has not, even though they all cry for social equity, that's what they are all about.
Right.
It's a virtue signal, right?
Sure.
Hemp is an unbelievable unlock for entrepreneurs who love the plant, have their own motivations, maybe want to make money, maybe want to change the world, maybe just want to do something for themselves, like whatever their motivation is. We are setting up businesses and we are trying to pave this path and we are trying to, you know, pull people along with us all around this, you know, this tune of accessibility. We want more people in, right? The market will decide winners and losers, we think.
Yeah.
Right. We shouldn't, you know, regulate or push people out based on socioeconomic barriers. We should include them and then let the market decide if they want the product that they're making.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What they're bringing to the table. That's what really matters in the end.
100%. Right. Yeah. And like you and I know this cause we're in it.
Right.
The idea is great. Then you get a liquid in a can. That's great.
Yep.
Then you gotta fucking execute.
Right.
And like there's plenty of places within that idea, developed product, selling, reselling, like that people can fail on execution.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like let's make it as, you know, the barrier to get in as low as possible. Yeah, we gotta have good actors and we gotta all, you know, come to agreement on some standards around testing and packaging and labeling requirements and all that stuff. But those should be table stakes for everyone.
Right.
But like, let's not do that and assume that everyone wants to pay $100,000 or $200,000 or $1 million to stand up a license.
Right.
Right. Like, let's give them a license to be a hemp manufacturer or hemp product manufacturer for $1,000 a year.
Right.
And if they're in good standing, they can renew with no issue. Great. That's money for the state. That's money for everybody. Yeah. Helps to cover the regulatory world, but we're getting a more diverse subset of faces.
Right.
We're getting businesses and faces that mirror the world we live in, mm-hmm. versus those who just have money to make it exclusive.
Right.
Right. And that's we swear by that in all of the businesses we're doing.
That's great. It makes me think about a brewery, right? Mm-hmm. So if we look at the craft beer boom in the United States, and then especially here in Minnesota, you know, really there was like 10 fantastic years, right? Like maybe, you know, pandemic screwed a bunch of stuff
up.
Yeah,
but you know, but then THC
is coming and helping some things too. But if we look at the buy-in for something like that, like just equipment alone, you're not getting a brand started for $10,000, $20,000. You're getting a brand started for $100,000, $200,000,
$300,000. Right.
And this is what a lot of the licensing within marijuana,
yeah,
right, is, man, you need a license. You've got to do this. You've got to hire this person. You've got to hire that person. You've got to hire that person. You've got to hire that person. You didn't get anything done yet.
Yeah, you haven't even operated a business of any sort yet.
Right.
Yeah.
And what a pain in the ass.
Right. And it's like that pain in the ass is not only just from a legal, operational perspective, taxing, but it's capital intense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like talking about breweries, like those are pioneers in this industry that we're talking about and that we're in,
yeah,
is going to help save some of their businesses.
Right.
Not just because they can make their own products, but they have line time that the whole world knows beer consumption is down.
Right.
Right. So if there's less beer being, you know, consumed, that means there's less beer being made. If those machines and breweries aren't running, they're losing money. Right. Or they're not making money.
Correct.
Right. So now all of a sudden you've got beverages like ours that don't need to ferment for a week or right. 10 days or whatever the fermentation process is. They can spin them out. They have line time. They have canning. They're now adding shifts and employing more people and making more money.
Right.
And that's like, that's Minnesota. That's Illinois. That's soon to be, you know, Kansas and Missouri. It'll be all over the country. These craft brewers are starting to find revenue. That's a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, it
is. Craft breweries, tap rooms, they're like pillars of people's communities.
Right.
You know, like we should want to find ways to get more of those guys and gals involved because mm-hmm. they make money, they employ people, et cetera. So like, that's again, one unbelievable benefit to what we're doing from a hemp beverage perspective. You know, Hemp Beverage Alliance has been great of connecting these people. Mm-hmm. But we should all be working and looking at this. And this is, again, a very strong opinion held strongly.
Right.
We as an industry should be looking out like that. That's what we should be all working towards. How do we make it easier for other people to participate?
Right. Yeah. Some inclusivity.
Yeah.
Like humans are humans.
Yeah.
Like let's go and have some fun and get some shit done.
Right. And like that's, you know, an ongoing conversation. And I'm sure there's going to be people who hear this and be like, fuck that guy. That's not what we signed up for. And I'm okay with that. Like your opinion's totally valid.
Sure.
But as you know, a black man in this country who has been through a lot and who's accomplished quite a bit, like I want kids who look like me to see themselves in me.
Right.
And I want my daughters and I want, you know, you know, your daughters and your children and everyone else. I want them to be able to see themselves in an industry.
Right.
Right. Regardless of where they come from. And so that that's a big driver for us.
Yeah. We just have to keep working on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, but if we're not working on it,
then what's
going to get done?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So thanks for keeping to work on it. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I'm doing my best to do. Too.
Yeah.
Hemp Beverage Alliance, you mentioned.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, what do we think that I'm not a part of the Hemp Beverage Alliance at this moment, but I've chatted with some folks about it. And the question I always ask is, well, it's just another organization that, you know, does what, right?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think that in a world where lots of organizations pop up without any clear, you know, line into what they actually do or what benefit there actually is, I will say like the Hemp Beverage Alliance has been really eye-opening in a good way because it's a, you know, by all intents and purposes, it's a consortium of over 200 or so brands and partners and that are aligned in the codification of this category at scale.
Right.
Right. And when you get people working towards policy and, you know, in the same, you know, going in the same direction, you get some momentum and some wind at your back. And so for us, it's like become pretty clear. Like, you know, there is a world where, you know, wholesalers, wine, spirits, beer, like they're starting to pay attention to this category because it's the first innovations in intoxicating beverages since Prohibition.
Right.
So there's a need for an alliance, a group that only is worrying about the advancement of this category.
Right.
Right. So in the HBA, Hemp Beverage Alliance, there's brands like us.
Right.
There's suppliers like Perfectly Dosed or, you know, Azuka or Virtuosa or Source. There's packaging partners that do, you know, package and things like that. There's all types of partners in there that stand to benefit from this industry continuing to grow.
Right.
Right. And like that, to me, like you think about it, going back to bias.
Yeah.
We were talking about this earlier. You think about things through the lens that you see them through, but you forget that like the, when this product that we are fighting our asses off to put in a can and put on retail shelves, like there's a lot of jobs tied to it.
Yeah.
The guy who designed our labels.
Right.
The guy who sold us our cans.
Right.
The girl who, you know, helped us with marketing.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, whoever. Like,
right.
That's a big deal. And so like this consortium in the HBA has really got those types of people in one room to talk about the betterment and the codification and the advancement of hemp beverages specifically, which
that's what
we are. We're hemp beverage. We're not, I don't, yeah, I know you do gummies.
Right.
I know you do some other products, but we're not, we're liquid in cans. We're liquid in vessels.
Right.
So like, that's important for me to have someone stumping for me and worrying about, you know, the betterment of my business,
right,
you know, specifically and exclusively.
And then, being amongst other like-minded individuals and understanding who is a part of the organization, you almost have this net that everybody's in there, and you're like, well, where would I go? And you're like, well, probably the person that's part of the crew.
Yeah. Well, and you know? Absolutely. Like, it's interesting. 'Cause like a lot of times you're building your thing and you got tunnel vision.
Yep.
And so you forget, like you've got this group of, you know, 200 or so companies, which means probably a couple thousand people,
right,
in Slack and whatever, who either have the exact same experience that you're about to encounter or have seen, had the conversation to help support you in some way.
Right.
So I needed a dye line for a carton.
Yep.
And I couldn't find it anywhere. We went to direct to some brands. They're like, oh, we haven't seen that. We don't have it.
Sure.
Even though I thought they'd have it. So I put it in there. Hey, does anyone know this?
Yep.
Within 5 minutes, I had an introduction to a group who had the exact dye line,
yep,
who sent us some samples. We're designing and now we're good to go. Now we have a new partner on packaging.
Yeah.
Like that, to me is the validation and the credibility building exercises that continue to establish us and cement us as a real industry and as a real category.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's quite a fight ahead there, right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, if we look at, and we look at the 2018 Farm Bill, and it was 2014 Farm Bill before that that kind of opened some things up, some further guidance in the 2018 Farm Bill, and then now the Farm Bill hasn't happened yet again. And yeah, I think that the Farm Bill hasn't happened yet again, and quote me or care about it or don't care about it. The reason why there isn't another one yet is because of
this. Yeah.
That's why, because there's a bunch of things that are going on, and then there's the cannabis side, which the cannabis side, interestingly enough,
the marijuana side is what
a marijuana. Well, no, I say cannabis as a whole, but then marijuana.
Yeah, but for the sake of the Farm Bill, I think it's always important to delineate, like,
yeah,
hemp and marijuana are both cannabis sativa. They're the exact same plant.
Right.
One, it's all based on potency in the plant by dry weight volume.
Yep.
But one side of this has commoditized the word cannabis,
right,
to make them seem like they're not still the Schedule One federally illegal version.
Right.
Right. And I think that's important to just delineate for this conversation, because unfortunately that is a major root of part of the tension.
Yeah.
Right. Is like the cannabis plant should be freed.
Right.
That is hemp and marijuana.
Correct.
That is low potency THC by dry weight and high potency THC by dry weight.
Yeah.
Right. Like they, it should be free.
Right.
But for the sake of the Farm Bill, we're fighting over the low potency by dry weight. And that's
right.
That's like that. That's a major sticking point.
Yeah. And it's and there's a few things that are out there like are absolute killers to the industry. And when we start looking at, you know, billions of dollars in an industry,
right,
and it's like, can it really happen? Can they really? And then you go, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some screwed up stuff that can happen.
Yeah. But like, and like a shout out to my partner, Glenn, who is the preeminent regulatory mind in this space.
Right.
Like, if you don't know, look him up, Glenn McAlfer. He is a badass when it comes to regulatory guidance, understanding law, you know, mitigating measures, et cetera.
Right.
And so I defer to him and like on this stuff very, very, you know, prudently. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, like a couple observations, couple opinions. And one, to your point, the hemp, the intoxicating hemp industry is like a $30 billion industry.
Yeah, it's huge.
And so it's not, I find it hard that federal legislators would kill a $30 billion and growing industry.
Yeah.
Because there's ramifications coming with it. There's jobs in their districts that are lost because of the decision they made.
Huge.
Right? And so I am a believer that there will be some level of regulatory guidance around the intoxicating hemp world. Mm-hmm. That will push it into the states to find, to make the ultimate decision.
Sure.
Right. On caps, potencies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So that's just my broad stroke observation of the farm bill.
Yeah.
It's like, I find it hard to believe that they're going to let that happen.
Yeah. I'm in the same camp, and that's why I wanted to ask. And I probably should ask every single guest that I have, or that we have anyways, on what that is, because it reminds me of the legacy market. Right. But in the legacy market, you knew that you were doing something wrong. Right.
Right.
And even though it shouldn't have been something that was wrong, and that's a whole nother conversation, but you're driving around in your car and you've got a quarter pound on you and you're driving your friends and things like that. Yeah. And you're dropping off bags.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. Nothing can go wrong ever. Right. But we're in a legal industry.
Right.
Legal
industry. Right.
Right. $30 billion legal industry.
That's that, by the way, has been asking for some time for regulatory guidance.
Exactly.
We want to be regulated. Help us regulate. Like, and there are some table stakes that have to change, right? Yeah. Like, no one should be marketing to kids.
No.
No one should be having, you know, there's a constant in every state house I go into. There's the Skittles, the Doritos. Yeah, right. And I'm like, those are counterfeit, or those are, you know, products that are copyright infringing anyways. That's a federal crime already.
Right.
Right. So you're saying it's the hemp industry's fault, but actually no, the federal government's already failed you to crack down on that.
Right.
Right. That's IP infringement.
Yeah.
Right. You register trademarks for a reason.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So it's like, that's a bullshit, you know, remark from the other side. So it's like, help us regulate ourselves. We're asking for it. Sensibly. Do we want to be overly regulated? No. I mean, the licensed market, they impose these heavy, heavy, you know, regulatory frameworks on themselves.
Right.
And they're finding it to be untenable. That's why that market's not doing well.
Right.
Right. So it's like, instead of trying to push this industry that's free market doing well into a space where people are already losing, let's bring that group closer to what we're doing on this side, so that everyone can win.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But an everyone can win model doesn't align with, you know, the five biggest multi-state operators owning the industry.
Right.
Right. So that's a
huge piece.
Correct.
To what's going on and who's fighting the fight on whatever side it is. You know that there's got to be some involvement in there. You know that there's got to be some alcohol lobbyists that are, there's everybody everywhere that's trying to figure out what is going to happen with what and how they can make it their way.
Yeah. And I think the alcohol lobby is just going to start waking up. Like they have not been, I think they've been in, they're clearly astute at what's going on.
Yeah.
But I think now you're starting to see the Total Wines of the world selling these products in several states.
Right.
And they've got, you know, scanned data on the success level of a, you know, not broadly open marketing from a marketing perspective, industry and how it's moving. That's getting into the wholesale channels. That's obviously getting into the large format beverage manufacturer channels. Like they're starting to have this conversation. I think their lobby will start to wake up because they know that there's money to be made.
Right.
And at that point now it becomes like, who's got more lobbying money?
Right.
Well, it's not Plif, the little ass brand, right?
No. Nope.
It's everyone who's around us.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when you start to see the big guns, you know, the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Right.
And I'll just be there to watch.
Yep. Yeah, so. We're just, you know, PBRs are there. PBR is getting in.
Yeah.
You know,
like. Yeah, yeah. PBR's in.
It's
Boston
here.
Boston Beer Company. In.
It's here. Regulatory, right? Mm-hmm. So we look at regulatory. One of the things that comes to mind for me is, all right, cool. Some folks are being able to enter the California market, yep. You know, historically massive, you know, recreational cannabis market, right? Like 100 milligram,
yeah.
100 milligram beverage. Like that's the king that's out there, right? That's not what it is here. We're talking like
five to 10
here. And it's not just because of regulation. It's because of like tolerance level and everything like that. So if we were able to say, this is what, and I know it's hard to go like, all right, cool. This is the United States.
Yep.
Because what I think would be great is labeling requirement that crosses all states, right? Because yep. You've got Iowa down here doing this. You got Wisconsin fucking up doing
whatever
they want.
California's got the most rigid requirements, right?
Right.
Prop 65 labels, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Et cetera. So, like so some standardization of what's required.
Right. And so then California, like oftentimes, controls what it'll end up being because it's such a large economy, right?
Yep.
And so that's what ends up happening there. What do we think a serving size should be? What do we think a maximum serving size should be in a beverage? And then does it matter the amount of liquid in the can? Meaning like, is it 64 ounces? Is it 32 ounces? Is it 10 ounces? Is it, you know, how regulatory do we need to get is one question of it. But really the real question that I'm asking is, what is a serving size and what do we believe or think at this moment, personal preference, and then what actuality is?
That's okay. So I'm not going to touch that question.
Okay.
And here's why, because that's a hot topic of conversation.
Sure.
I don't have a super strong opinion mm-hmm. on what the industry cap should be like, because I can go a number of ways. Like, who am I to the conversation we were having before?
Yeah.
Who am I to tell you what you should or shouldn't put in your body?
Right.
Right. So there's always that. I will say from my vantage point, from my company, what we have always said is like accessibility is in the expansion of the total addressable market,
mm-hmm.
right? Meaning a high potency cannabis user, they're going to be what they are.
Right.
Right. So they're either going to find something that's going to give them that high potency kick, that 100 milligram drink,
sure.
or they're going to understand the utility that I'm trying to play with my product, which is something other than a single shot get you as high as you can possibly be. Right.
Right.
So like for us, we always want to be at an accessible dose
mm-hmm.
so that people can choose their own adventure to some
right.
degree. Right. So like, I'll kind of leave it at that. That's like a very soft answer, but that
sure.
should give you an idea of like where we would be from a potency perspective
sure.
for Plyft.
Yep.
But again, like I don't have a problem with a 100 milligram drink, assuming like it's sold in the right channel. I don't think a 100 milligram drink should be sold in Total Wine.
No.
Like I think there's a channel for that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's my a strong opinion I have held very strongly. Like, there is a reason why there, you know, for long, many, many years, there was liquor stores, and in Texas, there's beer stores,
right?
Right. You can't sell liquor in a beer store necessarily, right? Like,
sure.
So I think there needs to be like, the conversation is like not around cap, but
mm-hmm.
channel for acquisition.
Sure.
Right. Like that would be my, and again, like I do think there's probably some sensible caps that should be, but I'm not the right person to say what that is.
Right. Yeah. So I suppose only, well, might as well make it just as interesting, right? Because what I think about it is I think that we responsibly could have a 20 milligram cap, right?
Okay.
I think that we could responsibly have a 20 milligram cap because tolerances are just going to be what tolerances are,
yeah.
right? And then dispensary, fine, do whatever you want to do. Fun thing is we don't have a packaging limit and here in Minnesota anyways,
yeah.
right? And
right.
With that going away, that kind of opened it up, right? Like, I was toying with the idea of the last podcast we were doing. I was like, I can do a 30 rack. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Well, you totally
and,
could.
And you can. And I think that's maybe a bit of what you're saying. Choose your own adventure. You know, Plyft is 4 milligram.
We have a 4 and a 10.
You have a 4 and a 10, right. So your 4 milligram, you get to have 3 of those to 1 of the 10.
Right.
If you really wanted
but
to,
but what's
right?
the setting, right? Like you
exactly.
and I were talking about this. There might be someone who could cycle through 3 tens, have a 30 milligram
sure.
in a social setting and be totally fine.
Right.
Most people with 30 milligrams, they're going to be like zombies.
Right.
Right. But I'm not the person to decide that.
Exactly.
You are.
Yeah.
Right. But the 4 milligram was always like, hey, if I'm pulling up to a barbecue with a 6 pack, you know, 24 milligrams. I'm sitting there for 2-3 hours and I drink the whole six pack. Number one, I've drank 300 calories of liquid.
Right.
Number two, I've drank 24 or so milligrams of THC. I'm in a really good spot.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was always the impotence of that brand.
Sure.
But again, like I'm not into the, like the nuance of what the cap should be. Like I, what you said about, you know, 20 milligrams yep. responsibly, like that feels sensible to me. But again, I'm more of where do you buy?
Right.
Right. And yeah. then like how is it presented? How is it marketed? You know, things like that. I'm more concerned about that and like consistency and packaging, labeling requirements, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Getting what's in the can, right? Like it says what it is. It yeah, is what it absolutely. Is. Like, right.
Yeah. And then like, again, I'm a firm believer that you shouldn't tell anyone what to do with their own bodies.
No.
Right. Like I just firmly believe that.
Agreed.
And if that's the case, then like, why am I going to start now?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Like, and oh, by the way, you don't, and the liquor lobby and the liquor stores and the wholesalers, they're like a tremendous allies in this.
Yeah.
Like I've learned so much from them. You never tell them that they can't put an 80 proof or a 102 proof on
or
the shelf.
Or 151.
Yeah. Like,
right. I mean, there's some craziness that's out there in the booze side.
Well, but you don't know that the person who buys that bottle of 151, they make themselves 151 and diet, and that's all they drink for the day.
Right.
Like you don't know their story. So yeah. like we're not going to get into telling you how to do and buy and consume right. the product.
Right.
Right. I do think we need to be really smart around the frameworks and the guardrails we put around us. Right.
Yeah.
We don't want bad actors.
Right.
Like you and I have seen them. Mm-hmm. The person who, you know, is got a really shitty product, plugging 100 mils in it, and they're not testing it
yeah.
appropriately. They're selling it in some smoke shop or vape shop. And look, I'm all about them making their money.
Right.
Right. But if we're going to stay in existence and stay in business, we've got to push the people who want to operate in the fringe to the fringe.
Right.
But when you do that, you create the illicit market. If you make the hurdle to get in too high.
Yes.
Right. So let's keep, hey, you can keep doing that, but you just got to meet a handful of quality standards.
Right. Right. And let's do that. Right. So let's talk to, it all comes back to accessibility
yep.
for both of us, I think. But when we're looking at convenience stores having it, smoke shops having it, liquor stores, fine. Right. So in this is Minnesota, but you have a lens that's greater than mine
yep.
because you live in Illinois.
I live in Kansas City. My partners live in Illinois. Our company's headquartered in Illinois. We've got distribution in 12-ish states now.
Sure.
So like we're seeing and hearing a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the Minnesota market and the way that we're working through things,
yeah.
what does it look like in Illinois? What does it look like
yeah.
in Kansas? What does it look yeah. like in Missouri? Like, yeah. give us some insight.
Yeah, so first things first, good segue, accessibility. Follow us on Instagram, @DrinkPlift. We're on TikTok, @DrinkPlift. Drop us a DM that says Plift Plus. We're gonna give some product away. Haven't decided on how much yet, but do that and we'll be reaching out and giving some product away.
Right.
Might be some merch in those boxes, shit like that.
Yeah.
So Minnesota is the gold standard mm-hmm. across the country of like getting its shit together and putting something on the books that allows entrepreneurs and businesses to operate and you know, execute and thrive or not, right? Like it's so every state that we're in or the overarching majority of the states that we're doing policy work in, there's some level of reference to Minnesota
yeah.
in a good way, right?
Yeah.
But like in states, you know, like Illinois, you know, there's been legislation that has gone through that mentioned like the three-tier system and making sure that, you know, there's some standards of you know, care so that if these products are truly going to be 21 and up, that it's, you know, working closely with people who are attuned at running regulated beverages.
Sure.
Right? They understand the framework. They understand the ramifications of stepping out of bounds, et cetera. Right? So like, that's, you know, constantly coming up because again, like for us to continue to codify this industry specifically, I'm not talking about the broader hemp industry. I'm talking sure. about hemp beverages.
Yep.
You need people who have more credibility in your tent.
Yeah.
Right. Beer wholesalers of America, wine wholesalers of America. They, you know, the Wine and Spirits Association, they have more credibility in state and at the federal level than any one hemp beverage does.
Right.
Right. They have come out saying, hey, we want to work to get legislation on the books that codifies this industry.
Yep.
That's a big deal. So, So like, you know, starting to find a coalition of people in state mm-hmm. that have shared values.
Yeah.
Right. And like beer wholesalers are making money. They, you know, a couple of years ago, a lot of these guys, they've been getting their shit kicked in for a while, but a handful of brands, the AB network in particular, they got a hit on the chin on something that's completely out of their control. Right. So they're looking for ways to make money again. You know, offset some of that pain. And so we want to be allies in that with them.
Yeah.
Right. So like state to state to state, those guys and gals are getting in the game. You know, we're seeing the C-store associations, they're getting in the game because they're making money on it.
Right.
But like, you know, and one of our good friends, the executive director of the, you know, Missouri Petroleum and Convenience Store Association, he was an unbelievable ally.
Yeah.
And he would come and we would talk and he's all about like, hey, my guys need to be fly by some rules too.
Yeah.
Like they're, you know, they're a critical point in the supply chain, right? Of like delivering product. And so like, we all want to be, you know, aligned on what does good look like.
Right.
And so like starting to find coalitions like that has been, you know, fundamental in getting quality legislation passed. Like Georgia passed some really good legislation recently. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some nuances to it that need to kind of be ironed out.
Yeah.
But that's a good regulatory framework with what Minnesota has done with some plus ups.
Yeah.
That, and I think what you're going to see on a state level is the legislation is going to get better and better and better. Mm-hmm. As time goes on, like just recently, you know, Representative Stevenson worked with our team on some new bill language, like the you know, the killing of the 5-hour rule.
Yeah,
like non-prem, like
right. That was a weird one.
Yeah,
it was in there,
but it kind of made no sense.
Like, what's going on?
Like, yeah.
And it's not reversed.
Yeah, it is.
Right,
it is.
Oh well, sorry. So it reversed as far as that, and we can, but more the it didn't play the other way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it was like, if you had this, you can't have this. But if you had this, you can still have that.
Yeah.
It didn't.
It wasn't reciprocated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but I think
now it's not there.
Yeah. It's not there. And like that was, you know, law got passed. Great. And then, you know, Glenn got with Rep Stevenson and some other stakeholders and they made like sensible changes to legislation. So I think right. The other part of it is like in the states you live in the states you operate in, like, you know, I'm not our head of government affairs. Glenn is.
Right.
Right. But like Glenn taps me in when he needs some support or, you know, whatnot. But like in my state where I live, I've got a vested interest. So I go to the state house, I meet with the politicians, I hear them. And it's like finding stakeholders who can say like, you know, broad sweeping, you know, conversations around hemp is one thing. But when you talk to your, you know, your state representative who lives in your district and they put a name to a face on a business that is doing good things and supporting them.
Yeah.
You know, they listen to you. And so finding, you know, that's the third leg of that stool is finding, you know, legislative partners who see the vision and understand that it's not let's kill or ban something, but let's find a way to regulate it responsibly.
Right.
Right. So like that's what we're seeing in all these other states. Like from a selling perspective, you know, Illinois is going to be a big state.
Yeah.
Really big.
What's it look like right now? Right. Cause I mean, we know that there's, you know, thousand plus places to get a hemp beverage in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And it's greater than that. Right. I'm just picking a number that I know is a true number. What does it look like in Illinois?
So, you know, first things first, there was a couple of distributors that came online early and, you know, kudos to them for leading the charge. Because again, like in an emerging industry, it's one thing when you're selling out of your trunk, which you can appreciate.
Yeah,
it's another thing when, you know, someone who's been running beer, NAA beverages in a market picks you up and starts running alongside you.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's a validation point for a market.
Right.
Right. So there's been a couple wholesalers, you know, our partners or friends at Glunn's got in the game early in Illinois.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, many of the brands in the Hemp Beverage Alliance helped to make that happen. And so they've been running alongside. We know that there's other wholesalers getting ready to get in the game in Illinois.
Right.
Which, you know, that's that breaking point, right? Like
sure.
That's Minnesota when, you know, all the guys here started getting involved. That's about to happen in Illinois.
Okay. Cool.
I can say there's probably, I heard the number a few weeks ago. I can't remember exactly what the number was, but I would say that there's probably 600 or so retailers around Illinois, but the majority of them are in the Chicagoland area that are carrying these beverages today.
Right.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah. That's a really good number given the fact that like there's only one real wholesaler running product. And I don't know how many brands they have in their set, right. But they, like, so that's really good. You know, I would say in a state like Kansas and Missouri, and I kind of clump them together because the odd thing about Kansas City is literally half the metro is on one side of a state line and the other is on the other. So half is in Kansas, half is in Missouri. So it's right. Like the Kansas City area, but that is a really nuanced territory because you have to have a wholesaler in Missouri and a wholesaler in Kansas to get the entire metro area covered.
Okay.
Because you can't cross state lines with the product. That's their federal licenses don't allow for that.
Yeah.
Right. So there's like, but what I can say in like St. Louis, there's really good pickup. There's been some wholesalers in St. Louis that have been running product for over a year now.
Okay.
So St. Louis is decent. Kansas City is growing like a weed.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Kansas City is such a fun place.
It's a great town. It's and like you think like the interesting thing is like in Minnesota, talking about these beverages like nomenclature, like everyone does it, mm-hmm. right? But when you get into markets where it's even still emerging and they're like, oh, how is this legal? And you tell them the story and you walk them through it. They're like, oh my goodness. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then that, and like they tell their friend and before you know it, you've got wildfire. And so like, there's some really good brands, you know, that are, you know, outside of Plyft that are doing really good things in Kansas City. Yeah. And like, I live there. So I actually take a ton of pride in being the, you know, the voice of the industry.
Sure.
In the the metro and in the city and the region. So I spend a lot of time just educating and evangelizing on behalf of the category.
Yeah.
But you've got 100, 150, you know, maybe pushing 200 retailers in the Kansas City metro that you can get it at. Yeah. Now you got probably the same in St. Louis, you know, Total Wine in Missouri is getting product today.
Yeah.
Stocked in. So all of their stores in Missouri are getting loaded up today.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, those are places that are growing really fast. You know, I think Georgia will be fast. I know there's a lot going on in Tennessee. You know, Ohio's growing really fast.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. That's great to hear. But that Minnesota's the leader the most that I heard out of that. Well, because why not?
We pride ourselves on that one. Yeah, no, I mean, look, Minnesota has done a ton to codify. That's why the HBA conference and festival is here. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you hear this before tomorrow, you should go over to the Minneapolis Cider Company. HBA is doing a festival, hemp beverages 1 to 6. It's going to be a great time. Lots of sampling, meeting, hearing, learning about the industry and brands from all over the country.
Right. And if not, next time.
Yeah. And next time. But that's why they wanted to bring it here, because like this is like the epicenter of the category. Right. And so, yeah, it's the leader, but it's also the most competitive.
Yeah.
In terms of the most brands on shelves, the you're fighting for shelf space. You know, it's a real category here. People's products are getting pulled from shelves because they're not selling. Like,
yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's the incubator for it's the incubation market for sure for the category at large.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Minnesota doesn't like outside brands usually either, and
that's what you think. But many of the fastest growing brands in the marketplace are actually not from here.
Right, right. Yeah, but normally, right? Like Krispy Kreme's not here for a reason.
Right.
Right? Like they came in, not here.
Okay, so let me ask you, if you were going to get a donut, because it is National Donut Day today,
yeah.
7th, where would you get a donut? Yeah.
Oh, man.
In Minnesota, where would you get a donut right now? It's hard, right? As you get older, you eat less donuts.
I know, you really do. You really do, which means the one by my house, right? So right over by Buster's on 28th, you know, yeah. Baker's Wife Donut Shop. There's Mellow Glaze right down. I mean, we've got a lot of donut shops just right there in South Minneapolis.
Yeah, so like, but the Mellow Baker, right? Is that what you called it?
No. There's Mellow Glaze, and then there's a Baker's Wife.
Yeah, Baker's so Wife sounds that one sounds like the move. See, I would go to the old-fashioned donut shop in Crystal.
Sure.
Yeah. Like that's where I would go. Cause that was my donut shop when I grew up.
Yeah.
So
it's nostalgic. But,
yeah.
Right.
It is.
Mine's not there anymore. It was in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. And man, it was like the best. Yeah. It was the best. Cause my dad would be working an overnight or something like that.
Come home with the hot.
Yeah. The come freshies. Home with a nice cinnamon twist. And I was like, freshies. This is the best.
Yeah. You wake up for school and like, that's what you get.
I know. You're welcome. Everybody. Yeah. Now you want a donut.
Yeah, well, it is like I said, National Donut Day. So where were we? I forgot.
We were talking about other states. I think you fully answered that, right? So if you were doing a podcast, what's the question that you would ask yourself? I know that's lazy, but it's also super interesting.
Give me some context, like just in industry at large, like sure. broader hemp beverages.
Yeah. What would you think that a listener would want to know that maybe they don't even know about right now?
Well, I think they'd want to know what are the best beverages on the market, but I'm not going to do that.
Oh.
Because okay. I'll make some friends and probably lose some friends along the way. You know, from a consumer perspective, like just a broad stroke listener,
yeah.
like where could I find it in my state?
Right.
Right. So, you know, I'll be super candid. Like one of the hardest things we do as a business is like keep track of all the, we're going into retailers every day.
Yeah.
So like to be up to speed on where, but you know, find your favorite brands and check their websites and go to their store locators and communicate with them. Like, I want to hear from people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want you to, if you could email hello@pliff.com, it comes right to me.
Right.
Right. Like I want to hear and see people and talk to people because I want to understand like how they see us. So, you know, one, don't be shy. We're all of us brands. You may think we're bigger than we are, but we're not. Like,
right.
like the owners and the founders of these companies are mostly very much involved and we want to hear from you. So be, you know, give us feedback, but I would want to know where can I find these beverages? Yeah. And the real answer is like, for us, we try to update our store locator quarterly.
Yeah.
Like we pull all the sales data of new store ads
mm-hmm.
and frankly, store losses.
Yeah.
If there are losses yeah. and then we, you know, we try to update that quarterly because like that's the you know, lifeline to the world. Cause like we don't do a ton of e-com.
Sure.
Right. We are a, you know, more traditional beverage business where we're focused on finding retail doors, connecting with consumers on the ground. So yeah. like that would be the biggest thing from a consumer perspective. If I was an entrepreneur looking at the industry, like yeah. I want to get in and I wanted to put beverage liquids in cans, I would say, spend a lot of time trying to figure out your cost of goods.
Yeah.
Right. Because the getting liquid in a can, getting packages designed, getting all of the labor and the costs associated with selling a case at retail, like that those are the things that are going to make and break your business.
Yeah.
Right. Because you capital efficiency, capital is hard to find.
Yeah.
Capital efficiency is mission critical, and what you can do with the money mm-hmm. is like, you know, very important. So really be scrutinizing. And you and I talked about this, like,
yeah, we have,
you know, how can we bring costs down so that your price to your retail partners, your price to your wholesale partners, everyone still makes money, but the consumer choice, they're not going to discount you or they're not going to disclude you because your cost too much.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I would, that's how I'd look at it if I was a prospective entrepreneur.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you may think that it's really, really, really hard to do something like this.
And it's not easy.
It's not easy, but it's not hard either.
No,
right?
but like those things that I just mentioned, you learn those in the business. You don't, yeah. you have no fucking idea right. when it's an idea. Like you're like, oh, hey, yeah, this is a great idea.
Yep.
Cool. Now, we can make it happen. Cool. How much is that going to cost?
I know.
Right. And then like before I ever sell a can to a consumer, I've now have XYZ and hard costs into this business.
Yeah.
Right? Like
right.
how can you find to get that XYZ hard cost as little as possible?
Yeah.
From the beginning.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working it backwards. I've already got it going and now I've got to figure out the rest of the stuff.
But
that's a way to do it too.
But that's how most people do it. That's yeah. how we did it, right? Like
right.
let's do it, let's launch. But like you've got the benefit. You can call me.
Exactly.
And I can tell you five other places to go find that input.
Exactly.
Right? Why? Because I've already got kicked in my shit for the last 2.5 or 3 years doing it. And like that's to yeah. me, like that's what friendship's about. But that's just also like, you know, good business is like,
right.
I want you to succeed. I don't want you to mm-hmm. put your life's work into something, your hard earned savings into something just for you to peter out. Not because you didn't have a good product or a good idea, but because you couldn't find the inputs in
right.
a place to make it affordable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That part is the tough part.
Yeah,
for sure. Figuring out all of those things. What is like 2 years from now? Right. This is tough. It's so, I was thinking about like, I was thinking about 7 o'clock tonight and being yeah. like, that's a long ways away.
I'm thinking about like in the next 25 minutes, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
So like two years from now, right? Well, hopefully we have, you know, federal descheduling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the case 2 years from
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Should have been happening. to be clear, marijuana should be federally legal. Like, right. I think it's stupid that we're having this this conversation about the legality of hemp versus marijuana. I think that the plant should be federally legal.
Right.
And I think then the groups who want to do high and low potency stuff or, you know, hemp related or not, like, they should get together and figure out what a sensible regulation for the industry. I want to say that out loud, because I get oftentimes people say, oh, you're anti-regulation or you're anti-legalization. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm further from that.
Yeah.
But so what is Plyft doing? What are we doing 2 years from now? Is that what the question is? So I'm a firm believer in manifestation. So I put it in the air. It's going to happen. But let's hopefully we're preparing our business to exit the business.
Yeah.
Not because we want to exit the industry and in the business, but we want to find a partner that can take it further.
Yeah.
Right. Like we know as entrepreneurs and operators, like, there's limitations in us.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, some of these potential acquirers for us, they can take us the next step. They can put us in every door in the world.
Right.
Like, so that's part of that. That's the exciting part. So hopefully we'll be prepping the business for that, because, like, ultimately what I want to do long-term, and Glenn and Andrea, what we want to do long-term is we want to start, and we're already doing a lot of this work, but a place where we can help incubate brands from underrepresented entrepreneurs and help them get started and use this experience to help them get ahead. So, like, long in the, you know, in this, you know, intoxicating cannabinoid world. So, like, that's like, so 2 years from now, you know, that's my hopefully we're doing that, and then we're in a place to be getting prepped to exit the business. But let's assume that, like, you know, we're going to be doubling down. We're going to continue to work. You know, we're going to show up in the markets that we're at. We're going to go meet our wholesalers. We're going to go meet our retailers. We're going to meet our salespeople. Like, we're in this business, and we'll continue to do that, because that's just who we are, right? Like, we, you know, hopefully we're in, you know, 30, 40 states at that point.
Right.
You know, and hopefully we're growing like a weed, and hopefully we're a brand that everyone loves and identifies with. And, you know, and we are doing good things, and we're good stewards of the industry. Like, that's what I would say in 2 years.
Yeah. That's awesome. I dig that. This has been great.
Yeah. This is the fastest, hour or so that we are, 45 minutes.
Something like that. We're just having fun talking, and they just put mics in front of us.
Well, and you and I were laughing about this earlier. We could talk all day.
Yeah, we could.
You know, about this type of stuff, and it could go anywhere. So I have a question for you.
Sure.
You're new to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And this is not for me, this is for everybody else.
Yeah.
But give a list of best, you know, top one or two restaurants, top one or two things that someone new to Minnesota should see.
Ooh.
And if you have a more expanded list, like, hey, if you want Mexican here, if you want this, that, like, I'm here, I'm fine with that. But I just think it's, you know, there's so many people coming to the state now for this, for other things.
Right.
You know, the state's great. Like, what would you tell people who are coming to see, you know, our home state? You know, I don't live here anymore, but what would you tell
them? Okay. So sushi.
Okay.
Sakura. And this is if you're staying in St. Paul. I mean, you can get there anyway.
Well, and see, like, that's the other thing, too, is, like, St. Paul, I grew up on the north side, so Minneapolis side.
Yep.
St. Paul is, like, a super hidden gem. And since I've been coming back more and more, like, I fuck with St. Paul heavy.
So. Yeah, St. Paul is fantastic for a lot of things. And so Sakura for sushi. I know there's plenty of other great sushi places, but there's just something about that. My kid, every single time he has a birthday, grandma brings us all out to dinner, and it's always there.
Right.
St. Paul Hotel or St. Paul Grill. We just call it St. Paul Hotel, but, that would be good. And that's right there. Get over into Minneapolis. You know, Buster's on 28th just because it's right by my house and it's super easy. But then there's Northbound Smokehouse and Brew Pub right down the road from that. And then you've got Ted Cook's.
Yep.
Ted Cook's 19th Hole for ribs. And then you've got the Cardinal Bar for just good old divey goodness.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be that.
What to see?
Lake Nokomis is pretty fantastic. Lake Hiawatha is pretty fantastic. What you can see from the city from either of those parks is pretty great. The walkability is great. Everybody's going to say Minnehaha Falls, but just make sure the water's high like it is right now.
Yeah.
And then it's fantastic.
Yeah.
What else to see? I mean, Sculpture Garden is great, but I don't get down like that. But it's everybody's going to see that anyways. Theodore Worth Park. I'd probably put that over Sculpture Garden.
Yeah, that park's great.
Yeah.
I grew up sledding on that hill.
Right? I grew up sliding down those hills on my way to work.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? Because I lived right in North Minneapolis on 27th and Queen, and I worked in Bloomington, so I was always zipping through Theo Worth.
Worth Parkway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. I just like that question just because it's like, well, how about you? Last thing.
Yeah.
You in 2 years.
Me in 2 years. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, me in 2 years, I don't know. Hopefully in 2 years, what's going to happen is I will, be paying myself, which will be fantastic.
Yeah.
It's going to be just a lovely thing. I will probably have a couple of interesting seasonal beverages that are out. I'm going to focus on the three brands that I have right now on the beverage side and the three brands that I have on the edible side. Hopefully I'm able, like you were saying, you know, kind of incubate, and I want to be a good partner. I want to be a good steward. I want to be able to help others do what it is that I'm doing. I mean, that's a tough question.
It is.
That's why I love asking that question. You know,
730 days is a long time away.
Yeah, it is.
A lot can happen.
There's a lot that can happen in that period of time. So, you know, I want people to have good products. I want people to rip a bag open. So 2 years from now, my absolute goal is that every single time somebody opens a bag of gummies, they smell them first. Right? Because if we think about our senses and all of the things that we're doing on a daily basis, and what really elevates our lives is the things that we're paying attention to, right?
Yeah.
What does it smell like? What does it taste like? What is the mouthfeel of that? You know, what is the full experience, right?
Yep.
It's just not a gummy. Is just not a delivery for intoxicating cannabinoids.
It's not a vehicle to get you high.
Right?
Smell. It's an experience. Yeah.
Smell it. Understand it. The flavor. It's like, yeah, it tastes like crap, but the experience is great. Well, no, the experience isn't great because it tastes like crap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that would be my goal, that every single person, when they open a bag of gummies 2 years from now, they're smelling the bag.
Love it.
Yeah.
Good. Well, good to see you, brother. I appreciate you having me in.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Cheers.
Cheers.